On Tech News Today, Uber's valuation soars. We'll tell you why. Plus, the NYPD rolls out police body cameras. And why might the billion-dollar lawsuit against Apple be thrown out of court? It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, December 5th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace recently launched the latest version of their platform, Squarespace 7, which has a completely redesigned interface, integrations with Getty Images and Google Apps, new templates, and an incredible feature called Cover Pages. Try the new Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter the offer code TNT at checkout to get 10% off. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin. And good morning, Brian Burnett.
Hey, good morning to you, Mike.
I know you're over there busy, like, running the show, so I didn't mean to interrupt you because I know it's a very crazy, busy show today, but I still wanted to say good morning.
Yeah, no problem. Just thanks, kind of a guy. Thanks like to Jason and Alex. That's the only reason why I got set up.
Yes, those are the top men I referred to before the show started, so thank you all for actually figuring out how to use the telephone. And also with us today is Elise Hugh, our co-anchor. How you doing, Elise?
Hey, doing great. Great to be here. Bringing the party.
You guys are doing your big Christmas party today, so everything's going to be completely off the chain in like 2 hours, right?
Yeah, 2 hours is about right, because that'll be 3 o'clock Eastern time.
Well, speaking of awesome things, which I think we were, Orion actually launched today. How cool was that? And we actually, before we talk about it, let's look at the video. This is a beautiful launch. This is a dawn launch this morning. What time was it, Elise? It was 7 a.m.?
It was 7 a.m. Eastern. Yep. And it was up there for 4.5 hours before it splashed down in the Pacific.
And there it goes. And I know the rocket science part of it is really complicated and hard. But
there's
as somebody in broadcasting, I'm so impressed that they were beaming video from this rocket, even as it was going into space and going around in orbit. I think it was pretty much live, wasn't it? How do they do that? I mean, sure.
Well, it is a new deep space capsule, so I imagine the technology is baked in somewhere in the multi-million-dollar cost of it.
It ain't Skype, I tell you that. Now, this is the first flight for NASA's new deep space capsule. They're basically preparing to go to Mars, and so they need to test certain things, and this is the first major test of that. It's a critical step on NASA's journey to Mars. It's a 4.5-hour flight. And did it splash down yet or not yet?
It has splashed down.
It has.
Yep.
Okay, good. So a successful mission. And look at that. Look at that video. I mean, it's unbelievable. Incredible. Anyway, really exciting. Yesterday they had to scrap the landing. They had a little bit of trouble. And today they launched it. Very awesome. Let's jump into the news. Despite recent controversies and pushback by regulators and taxi companies, the ride-sharing service Uber is flying high. A new $1.2 billion round of funding yesterday valued the company at an incredible $41 billion. That makes Uber more valuable than Delta Airlines. Lisa Fleischer is a tech reporter for the Wall Street Journal and joins us now to explain this curious turn of events. How are you doing, Lisa?
How's it going?
It's going great. Thank you. Now, how is it possible that a company that arranges rides for people could be more valuable than 72% of the Fortune 500?
Well, for starters, you can look at what their business model is. I mean, they take a 20% cut of every ride. Now, that doesn't mean that that's a profit, but that's their revenue. And, you know, if you have a service that basically allows you to sort of take a cut of every single taxi ride, which they hope will be in the world, you can see where the revenue would start to add up.
Part of the reason Uber has been in the news so much lately, Lisa, is because of its sort of win-at-all-cost style, which seems to, at least through all the reporting that we've read, come from the founder and CEO. So is this valuation essentially saying that Silicon Valley or VCs are rewarding this type of win-at-all-costs, sort of zero-sum game type of behavior by leaders and founders?
I don't know if they're rewarding some of the stuff that we've we talk about the stuff that has made us raise our eyebrows. But I do think that a lot of VCs, a lot of these investors are looking for somebody who is aggressive and who wants to make a very big business, a huge business. You know, someone who sees not just a small, I'm going to own this one market, but someone who has, you know, big goals.
Now, the investors that that raised this $1.2 billion includes Qatar Investment Authority and at least two hedge funds. These are people who are saying, here, Uber, take more than $1 billion of our money. We believe in your future. And yet there seems to be a growing regulatory and legal backlash against the company. They're banned in Berlin and Hamburg. They're under pressure in Thailand, Vietnam, and Singapore. Why is it that investors are confident that Uber will be able to overcome all this? I mean, sometimes it seems like the trend is in the other direction with more and more cities aggressively pushing back against Uber.
That's a really good question. And actually, just a slight correction, they're not banned in Berlin and Hamburg, but they had to lower their prices. And I definitely do not fault you for not having that like exactly on, because the game's just changing every single day. I mean, we made a map partially for our own benefit, but partially just so we could keep everyone else up to date online. We have a map on WSJ.com that sort of shows the different cities and the status of their fights with regulators. And like, it seems that every week we have to update it. But it depends on the city. It depends on the country. Depends on the rules. But there's a lot of fights that Uber is entering. I mean, I almost don't even know if I should be writing a story about, you know, X fight here or whatever. I kind of roll my eyes almost at the single fight story because I've just seen so many of them. I wrote about their problems in, I think it was Singapore the other week, but. Yeah, they're managing a lot of fires.
And Lisa, what do you know about how the company is going to spend the latest billion it's raised?
I don't personally know, but I think that one thing they do is when they enter a market is they'll pay drivers by the hour to make sure that there is a good supply, because you certainly don't want to encourage people to download an app and then have them open it up and not be able to get a ride. So they generally lay out a bunch of cash in the very beginning. They also spend a lot to kind of just push down prices. It doesn't take a lot for them to open in a new city. They usually will send about three people there. So, you know, it's not like they have to build out an office or anything like that. The other thing that they're certainly going to have to do is spend a lot of money on lawyers and lobbyists to fight all these fights that we're talking about. I mean, basically, they're going in and saying, look, here's what we do. People are going to love us, and the politicians are going to figure out that people love us, and so they'll change the rules for us eventually.
Lisa, is it really true that they're going to expand into rickshaws in India?
Well, actually, I'm not sure about that India thing, but I know that at one point, and I'm not sure if they still do it, but at one point they were doing motorcycles in Paris, I think. It wouldn't surprise me, because if that's how people are getting around, why not?
Well, they certainly will. I know in a lot of parts in the world, lived in Kenya for a little while, and in Nairobi, the scooter taxis, where you just get on the back of somebody's scooter, is more common than regular taxis in an automobile. And so if they want to be global and really penetrate the entire world, they're going to have to embrace scooters, rickshaws, skateboards.
However people get around, I think they're going to want to do it. And eventually maybe even driverless rickshaws.
Could be. The future is going to be weird. Lisa Fleischer is at WSJ.com, and you can follow her on Twitter at Lisa Fleischer. Thanks for joining us, Lisa.
Thank you. Have a good week.
All right. You too. In just a sec, we're going to check in on the Big Brother cams coming to NYC. But first, I want to talk about Squarespace very briefly. You know, we talk about Squarespace as a place where you can build your personal site or blog. But, you know, I think businesses and even government agencies, every sort of organization that needs a website or a blog should be using Squarespace, simply because it's so easy to use that there's basically no training involved at all. If you do need training, of course, Squarespace will provide it themselves. But I found that you can just go in there and play around with stuff. Their templates are so easy to use. Their features, their sort of control panel is just really intuitive. And now with Squarespace 7, it's unbelievably easy to use. Everybody should be using this. If you are or own a small business, You should know that e-commerce is available for all subscription plan levels. That means you can build an online store and make, you know, all of your transactions through Squarespace. Let them handle it. Why should you go through the pain and suffering of engineering all this stuff from scratch when the one that Squarespace has built is way better than the one you're going to build for yourself? and their hosting is way better than any hosting you could do for yourself, because they have so many good engineers, such a great data center. You're not going to be able to top them in any way. And it starts at just $8 a month. And that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And of course, they're mobile ready. So all of your mobile visitors to your site are going to see a beautiful website as well. So start a free two-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT, and that'll get you 10% off. And it'll show your support for Tech News tonight, today. And we really appreciate that. And to begin using Squarespace 7, of course, if you're an existing user, just go to the Settings tab, activate the new features, and enjoy them. They are right there for you to use. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Squarespace, start here, go anywhere. Well, Lisa, it looks like Big Brother's coming to New York City. What's going on?
Well, amid all these nationwide calls for more police to wear body cameras so that they can possibly help reduce excessive force or bad behavior by cops and perps, the New York Police Department is going to launch a new body camera program in a few of its precincts. And that starts tomorrow. So joining us to talk about it is journalist Jay Cassano. Jay, welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, tell us a little bit about these Vivu cameras themselves. How do they work, and where will they be sending the footage that they capture?
Yeah, so the NYC pilot program starts today in three precincts, and there'll be another three precincts soon to follow. The three precincts that are starting today will be using the Vivu LE3 camera. And the other three precincts next week will be using a camera from Taser, which is the same company that makes the Taser stun gun. So basically, the NYPD is trying to decide through this pilot program which model they like more. These cameras both are manually turned on by officers while they're in the field and manually turned off. And then at the end of their shifts, the mechanisms are slightly different depending on the camera model, but basically they're connected to the database system that is created by Vivu or Taser and uploaded into a content management system for the recorded videos. And while the videos are on the devices themselves, the cameras, they're encrypted. They can't be accessed by officers directly. The idea being, that only people who are with access to these files can actually view them or delete them or modify them, whatever. You can't just have an officer connect the camera to their laptop and delete a file that could incriminate them.
I think it's weird that the Taser people are going to be making these cameras. I, for one, would love to see a Taser with a built-in camera that has an iPhone 6-like slow-mo feature, but that's just me. Oh. I'm probably in the minority. Now, New York City has been...
It actually already exists.
Yeah, right. Well,
the Taser company, I was talking to the CEO of Taser, and he was saying, the reason they made body cameras instead of just these built-in cameras on Tasers was you basically had a highlight reel of people getting tased when, the cameras are just in the Taser themselves.
They might as well make it entertaining. The taxpayers are paying for it. They might as well get something out of it. Now, New York City's been overrun by protests over the death of Eric Garner after he was placed in a chokehold by an NYPD cop. The event was recorded on video by a bystander, and yet there was no indictment. Why does anybody think that body cameras are going to make any difference?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. These cameras are definitely not a cure-all. Technology alone is not the solution. I think after Mike Brown's death, under unclear circumstances, everyone was saying, body cameras are a no-brainer solution here. We'd be able to see what took place. There's no ambiguity. We know whose version of events to believe. But in New York, we had an officer who killed Eric Garner in a chokehold, which is a banned maneuver, even though the whole encounter was caught on tape. The grand jury did not indict him. I'm personally not convinced that cameras alone are going to make a difference. But I think, if wisely implemented with policies alongside them, they can have an impact. And I was in the street last night reporting alongside protesters, and protesters weren't calling for police body cameras. They were calling for reform to the NYPD.
Yeah. And go ahead, Elise.
Go ahead, Mike.
It's all yours.
Well, you know, one thing in this conversation about cameras that we've been having for the last, you know, since Ferguson now, is that there's a lot of folks who are advocates for cameras who point to this study in Rialto, California, which seems to be a very small and limited study. Do we have any wider evidence of the effectiveness of this solution that everyone, including the president, is now calling for?
Yeah, at this point, we absolutely don't. The Rialto study was the very first study of its kind. It definitely does show some promising stats. You know, complaints against officers were down, violent crime was down, but it's a small department. It's one case study. I don't think we can really extrapolate from that alone.
All right. Well, Jay Cassano is at jcassano.net, and you can follow him on Twitter at Jay Cassano. Cassano spelled C-A-S-S-A-N-O. Thanks for joining us, Jay. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, AT&T is still throttling unlimited data customers, according to a report by Ars Technica's John Brodkin. John joins us now to talk about his exclusive. How's it going, John?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Now, wait a minute. Didn't they stop throttling unlimited data users some time ago? What's going on?
I thought they did. Well, no, they never stopped throttling unlimited data users. What I thought happened and sort of did is that they changed their policy so that after unlimited data users hit a certain point, like 3 or 5 gigs a month, they're still subject to throttling, but only in times and places when the network is congested. So usually they wouldn't be throttled. I sort of misread it. What they had posted on their website, it was written a little vaguely. Turns out LTE is still being throttled no matter what, whether the network is congested or not. It's only the older networks, 3G and HSPA Plus, that have this system where they're only throttled in times and places of congestion. I don't know exactly why, but they say there's a technical problem where they haven't been able to put the less draconian type of throttling in place in LTE just yet. They say it's going to happen sometime next year, so consumers will be treated more fairly, but they have not said exactly what time next year, so it could be 13 months from now.
Yeah, so how could you even sell a plan as unlimited when you've been throttling all along? I mean, isn't that fundamentally dishonest?
Yes. I don't know if they've been doing it all along. They've been doing it for a few years. Basically, as carriers move from unlimited plans to limited plans, they've taken this step. They claim it's needed to manage the network. That might be true to an extent, but it's mostly an attempt to move consumers onto limited plans, which may cost more. And even if they don't cost more, if the consumer uses above that amount of data, they will be hit with an overage charge. So the network capacity is there. People can use as much data as they want. But the difference is with the limited plan, you pay another, I don't know, $10, $20 a gigabyte instead of just being slowed down.
You know, I don't like any of this, especially as an AT&T customer. Didn't the FCC's Tom Wheeler crack down on throttling practices? I mean, all of this stinks because basically they're allowed to throttle when there's network congestion, which is an incentive to make sure that there's network congestion. I mean, it's just the whole thing is a mess. And do you think that that Wheeler is going to come back and do anything about this continued, first of all, the vague wording, second of all, the throttling and all of the rest of it?
Well, he already sent letters to all four carriers, and especially he objected to Verizon doing throttling on their unlimited LTE plans. That's partly because Verizon has special spectrum that has some open access requirements. And Wheeler was able to force Verizon to back down. And as of now, Verizon is not, that's a funny picture, Verizon is not throttling its 4G plans. It still throttles 3G plans, but on those plans, at least it's happening only when there's congestion on the network. All four major carriers, including Sprint and T-Mobile, they have some sort of throttling in place. As far as I can tell, I think AT&T is the only one that still has a throttling that happens regardless of whether the network is congested, unless you count T-Mobile's, which is okay because they disclose it right up front. You're buying a gig or 5 gigs of high-speed data, and then you get throttled afterwards. That's a little more honest because they, you know, it's just part of the plan that, you know, you're not actually paying for unlimited high-speed data Whereas with AT&T, you are paying for unlimited high-speed data and you're not getting it.
The U.S. Mobile carriers are such a mess, and Elise Hugh doesn't care at all because she's moving to Korea.
That's right.
It's unbelievable. Well, tell
us. Bye-bye, AT&T.
Tell us what it's going to be like, Elise. It's going to be so fast. It's going to be awesome. I can't wait to live it through vicariously through you.
All I have to do is bring an unlocked phone to South Korea, and then they'll pop in a SIM card.
Hard to imagine.
Bam.
Hard to imagine. John Brodkin is at ArsTechnica.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at JBrodkin. Thanks for joining us, John.
Thanks.
All right. Well, breach fatigue is pandemic, and this next story isn't going to help at all. What's going on, Elise?
Another day, another massive security breach. This time it's the retailer BB, the purveyor of teen clothing stores. BB said today that its payment processing system has been hacked and that credit card data may have been stolen. That data includes cardholder names, account numbers, expiration dates, and verification codes. I feel like we've talked about this again and again throughout the year as we've done this show, Mike, but, you know, it just one after another. Analysts had been expecting that this was going to be the year of the mega hack. It is true. These breaches are going to keep happening until we're on much more secure payment system, more secure payment infrastructure in general.
Yeah, i.e. Apple Pay and Google Wallet. You got to embrace this, retailers. This is like really important tokenized payment. I mean, they don't like it because they don't get to collect the data themselves. But tokenized payment doesn't leave any of the credit card data within the servers of the retailer. And all of these hacks, like this has been a theme all year long. They're just hacking the retailers. The retailers have partners that they share their passwords and access with, and so they're highly hackable. With a tokenized system like Apple Pay or Google Wallet, they can't do that kind of stuff because it's just a transaction directly involving the financial services company, and they have good security. So this is just dumb that this keeps happening. These retailers have got to embrace NFC-based tokenized payment systems because the credit card companies aren't going to put up with it anymore. They're the ones who have to pay the bills when this happens. So I don't know. Elise, have you used, I don't recall if you're an Apple user, but do you use Apple Pay?
I have it, but I haven't tried it yet. So I'm eager to try it. And one of the sort of reasons why so many of us don't seem to care when this happens again and again is because what you touched on, this notion that it's the banks that end up paying the consequences of this, of these breaches, and they just have to replace our cards and things like that. But we don't actually see a hit to our wallets or our statements when this happens. And so the lack of consequence also is part of the reason why there's less urgency about moving on to other non-1960s magnetic stripe technology on plastic cards.
Yeah, yep, that's a good point. And anyway, I have the feeling we're going to keep seeing stories exactly like this on into the next year. It's really kind of tragic. Well, in just a minute, we're going to give you some really interesting updates, including an update on the Apple lawsuit. But first, I want to tell you about Gazelle. Gazelle will sell you a gadget. That's right. You're used to selling gadgets to Gazelle. They'll also sell you some really great gadgets. One of my favorite things to do is if I have a phone that I really like and I break it, I want the same phone again, unless there's another phone that's really awesome. I want to get that one. But with Gazelle, with their new trade-in program, you can basically sell your old gadget and get a new one just like it that's in better condition. And that's a great way to sort of upgrade without changing makes and models, if you're happy with the one that you have. And of course, a lot of iPhone users, if you're going to be an iPhone user, there's basically one iPhone, you know, there's a big one and a small one now. And you may, if you break it or scratch it or something like that, you may just want to upgrade. And Gazelle makes it super, super easy. They have certified like new, which is a category of phone that they will sell you at a much lower price than a brand new phone. But the phone is exactly like a brand new phone. It's indistinguishable from a brand new phone. They put it through a rigorous 30-point inspection to make sure everything works flawlessly, and they back it with a 30-day risk-free return policy. So you can have it for a month, and if you decide for whatever reason you'd like to send it back, just send it back, and it's completely risk-free. And of course, you can still sell your gadget to Gazelle. Always a great idea. Super easy. That's in your box. Throw it in the box. Off it goes and get paid. It's so easy that there's no reason for you to have devices sitting around the house, and I know you do. So you got to send those in to Gazelle. They've paid nearly $175 million to over 1 million customers. What's your iPhone worth? Take a minute and go to gazelle.com and find out. A panel of judges in the UK has declared that some surveillance methods uncovered in the Edward Snowden revelations are legal. The ruling by the five-member investigatory powers tribunal was a response to a lawsuit brought by human rights groups like Amnesty International and Privacy International. The lawsuit said that the GCHQ's tapping of fiber optic cables to harvest emails, photos, phone calls, and social networking chatter was a violation of the privacy protections in the European Convention of Human Rights, but the tribunal said no, it wasn't. The groups are going to appeal the ruling to a European court, and my guess is they're going to have a different take than the UK tribunal. Well, the Taiwanese government today slammed 12 smartphone makers for violating the privacy of users. The brands singled out include Apple, Samsung, HTC, Sony, and Xiaomi. The country's National Communications Commission said some of the phones could collect user data without permission, which is against the law in Taiwan. The government will order the company to make changes, and if they refuse, the possible penalties could range from a nearly $7 million fine or the banning of the phones from the Taiwan market. The investigation was a response to the news we reported to you earlier this year, which is that Xiaomi phones were phoning home and sending user data back to China without informing or getting permission from the users. Elise Hugh, this is a really interesting story, partly because Taiwan is so strict about this kind of stuff. They basically say that it's illegal under Taiwan law for it to be possible, not for actual it to occur, but for it to be possible for user data to go back to the company without getting permission.
Well, it's amazing that there's any sort of country out there that has a regulatory system or regulators who have written laws that are actually caught up with the technical times. I mean, we have lawmakers here in Congress who have again and again failed to demonstrate any understanding of basic things like email. And so it's impressive to me that they even have this law on the books.
It is, and they're strict about other things too. They're the country that actually went after Samsung. If you recall, Samsung was busted multiple times for lying in advertising, for basically doing astroturfing in chat rooms, basically paying people to go in there and say nice things about Samsung. And it's the Taiwanese government, I think they're almost alone in doing those kinds of things. So they're really, really strict with these consumer electronics companies, which is, again, especially impressive because Taiwan is a major place where many of the components and other things. In fact, the company that makes all of the iPhones.
HTC.
HTC. But also, HTC is a Taiwanese company. But also, what is it called? Foxconn is. The manufacturing takes place mostly in China and around the world, but that's a Taiwanese company. So it's really impressive that they've got so much money behind going easy on the consumer electronics industry, and yet they're very hard on them, and they're holding them to task. Well, I think it's a good thing. Well, we've reported twice this week that Apple is currently defending itself in court in a $1 billion class action lawsuit over abusive iPod practices. The company's been accused of locking out and even deleting music files from users' iPods that originate on a service other than Apple's own iTunes. Apple's even admitted to some of the practices, but there's just one problem. The lawsuit covers a period ranging from September 2006 to March 2009 when these practices were in place. But it turns out the lead plaintiffs in the case didn't buy iPods during that period and were therefore unaffected by these policies. District Judge Yvonne Gonzalez-Rogers, who's seeing the case, asked, "What am I supposed to do if I don't have a plaintiff?" You know, it's especially suspicious, Elise Hugh, because the iPods that they did purchase happened right after that period of time. So it kind of... I don't want to level an accusation, but it kind of sort of seems like they found out about the policies that Apple had and they rushed out to buy an iPod so they could file a lawsuit. That actually happens a lot. And, you know, if they didn't actually get affected by it, if they didn't have files deleted or if they weren't affected in any way, then it kind of makes you go, this sounds like a suspicious lawsuit.
I kind of like that judge, though. She seems funny. She seems wry.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. She understands the ironic humor of not having a plaintiff. So, very important in a judge. Well, on Cyber Monday, we reported on Amazon's factory robots, which helped the company ship huge numbers of products really quickly. But Amazon might want to slow down a bit. Texas goat farmers Christian and Lisa Seeger got a box from Amazon that did not contain the book they ordered. Instead, they found a roller from the Amazon factory conveyor belt. And the story gets even weirder. When they told Amazon about it, the company said they'd have to ship the roller back to them at their own expense. The shipping cost $19. And if they didn't ship back their roller, Amazon wouldn't send them the book they ordered. They essentially were holding the book hostage until they got their roller back. The Seegers were tweeting the whole thing. So after some outrage on Twitter, Amazon reversed itself and sent a return label to ship the roller. Okay, that was a good picture.
I love this story. That's hilarious.
I know. You just think moving so fast. You know, one of these days there's going to be like a factory employee that's going to show up in a box. And that's going to be...
You joke about this,
yeah,
but...
I know. I shouldn't. Or it's going to be somebody's hand or something. Anyway, it's... They do things really fast at Amazon. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Paul Scott in Las Vegas, Nevada, who says he watches Tech News Today in his home office with his gigantic dog, Daisy. Do we have a picture of that? Look at that dog. That looks like the kind of dog, like if you're stuck in the snow, it shows up with a little thing of brandy.
What a sweet girl, though.
Yeah, look at that.
Seems like a sweet girl.
Yeah, that's
well, thanks, Paul.
That's a sweet home office, too, man. That is a nice place to work. Well, how do you watch or listen to TNT? Just record a video or take a picture of your setup or yourself. Post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it. And that is the Tech News Today. Elise Hu, you know, yesterday we talked to Christina Warren, who had been poring over all the documents in the Sony Pictures case. You've been doing the same thing, reporting on the same story. That is a crazy story, isn't it? I mean, that's just, it's got so much to it.
You love anything that involves North Korea, frankly, but especially when it's North Korea, considering it a sort of terroristic action to put out a movie featuring Seth Rogen and James Franco. So when James Franco is the enemy of a foreign state, I think that's baseline excellent story to begin with.
Yep. And Kim Jong-un's father, Kim Jong-il, a little bit of Silicon Valley trivia here, once threatened to turn Palo Alto, California into a sea of fire. The context for that was that a woman who was a part of, I think it was the Bush administration's negotiating team over there, they were doing one of those North Korean things where North Korea gets really scary and then the U.S. and other countries go rush to Pyongyang, they negotiate. North Korea ends up with a bunch of food aid, and then they quiet down for a while. That's been the sort of dynamic since the 50s. During one of these negotiations, Kim Jong-il basically threatened her personally and said he was going to turn her hometown of Palo Alto, California, into a, quote, sea of fire, unquote. It's a small town, so it'd be more like a lake or maybe a pond of fire. But anyway, it was an interesting...
Badge of honor. It's a badge of honor.
So where can people consume this, the product of your labors over this story?
Well, you can listen to NPR, our morning program, Morning Edition, our afternoon program, All Things Considered. You can find me on the All Tech Considered blog at NPR.org or on Twitter at Elise WHO.
All right. Elise WHO, thank you so much for co-anchoring today, and we will see you next week.
Great to be here. Thanks, guys.
Take care. Well, you can subscribe to Tech News Today on Stitcher. Why not? It's a great place to subscribe. Or you can choose some other way to subscribe, twit.tv/TNT. You can follow us on Twitter. Tech News Today TV is our Twitter name. Send us email to tnt@twit.tv. Call us at 260-TNT-SHOW. And don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you Monday.
Nice.